Welcome to SK Wealth Management Solutions and Knowledge Podcast, Episode 24. We take an integrated approach to financial planning and investment management to improve your financial lives. My name is Matt Nealand, and I am the Chief Investment Officer at SK Wealth Management. Last year, many people questioned how the financial markets could rise while the economy was in a deep recession. We flipped the calendar, and 2021 is a very different climate, filled with a lot of promising news, including a faster-than-expected vaccine rollout, COVID-19 cases plateauing, declining unemployment, and strong economic growth forecasts. But the markets are having a difficult time pricing in the global economic recovery. We have seen this trend acutely in the U.S. This year, there's been many drops in the S&P 500 of 3.5% or greater, and the NASDAQ index, which has a heavy weighting in technology stocks, has seen a series of even greater drops. This is not isolated to stocks. Government and corporate bonds around the world have tumbled in their worst start to a year this century, as markets spooked by the prospect of resurgent inflation turn increasingly volatile. To better understand what's going on and discuss the outlook, I am joined by Joseph Tenaglia, an Associate Director of Asset Allocation at WisdomTree Investments. Joe is a member of the Asset Allocation Team. He is responsible for building model portfolios and creating custom solutions for portfolio managers and advisors. He is also a member of the committee managing the firm's ETF model portfolios and helps shape and communicate WisdomTree's thoughts on the markets. Joe, you just wrote a great article called Dusting Off the Inflation Playbook, and we've heard a lot of talk about higher inflation this year. Why is the topic of inflation coming up more often this year?
To your point, it's coming up more and more, and really the stars are finally aligned for higher inflation after years and years of really a disinflationary overhang. Interestingly, we're seeing it both from a supply side and from a demand side. So if you think about the supply side, the COVID shock and then the really sharp recovery afterward led to a lot of disruptions in capacity and supply chains around the globe. And if you think of things like semiconductors and housing materials and commodities, if you try to get a car right now, there's a huge backlog on production because they can't produce enough semiconductors to fill them. So, you know, really, it was just that sharp drop down and then recovery that caused a lot of bottlenecking there. And I personally just bought a couch and the delivery is taking 4 to 5 months. So really, it's a slowdown from the supply side, but it's also happening from the demand side as well, namely on the fiscal stimulus side and specifically what the fiscal stimulus is targeting. And it's those people with a higher propensity to consume, those below a certain income level, because if you give money to a corporation or wealthier individuals, they're more likely to save it, whereas those on the lower end are much more likely to spend that. So you're seeing not all stimulus is created equally, particularly when you compare it to something like the 2017 tax cuts. So again, you're seeing these impactful moves from a supply side and from a demand side that are likely going to drive prices higher, at least for this year, in our opinion.
Why would investors fear inflation? And is this beginning of a long-term trend of higher inflation?
The idea of needing higher inflation, I find, is often really foreign to people who aren't necessarily in the financial world on a day-to-day basis. But I think it's really important to maintain. And a lot of people will look at their bills and their costs and say, costs have already gone up a ton over the last few years. Why do we want inflation to go up more? Why do we want costs to go up more? But inflation covers so many different inputs and averages a ton of different components that really feed into everyday life. And we think it's important to keep a positive inflation, a slow but positive inflation. The Fed keeps it at around 2% target, because while too much inflation, too high inflation is obviously a bad thing, deflation is probably even worse. And, you know, if you think about what happens in a deflationary environment, if consumers expect prices to be lower in the future, that really freezes spending. It freezes consumption. I'm not going to buy something today if I think it's going to be cheaper 6 months from now. And that's when you get into a bit of a deflationary death spiral. So we think that that's arguably worse than a moderately higher inflation year. Do we think it's a trend or more of a short-term blip? That's really the debate that we're having with our team and our investment committee right now. I think you'll likely see slightly higher above target inflation this year, possibly 2022. But I wouldn't say that we're necessarily on the trajectory of a long-term higher inflation level. And I think, again, getting back to that fiscal stimulus point, the low-income consumers are not receiving these big $2,000 checks every couple of months. I think these supply chain disruptions that we were just talking about will eventually resolve themselves. But I also think some of the long-term factors that have driven inflation lower over the last 10 years, they're not going away. They're not suddenly gone. We still have aging demographics, not just here in the US, but across the entire globe. We have massive productivity gains from, you know, advancements in technology. It's not like these are suddenly disappearing from the face of the earth. So I think we're likely to see it higher this year, potentially next year, but certainly not runaway. And I don't think that this is necessarily a long-term trend of worrisome inflationary levels.
Does inflation affect certain sectors of the financial markets more than others, you know, and certain security types?
Absolutely. So we're seeing it play out in different asset classes and sectors and different academic factors that we write about and invest in quite a bit at WisdomTree. And really, you've seen that play out within the markets over the past couple of months. And I think the biggest thing is that, you know, inflation expectations are rising because growth expectations are rising. Let's take a step back and think, okay, well, who benefits the most from an environment where this growth expectation is rising and really the broadening out of leadership in market participation takes place? So commodities are a huge beneficiary there. That's something I've written about. Acceleration in global growth really drives demand for energy and for materials and for other types of different commodities. So commodities are definitely one that have had a very bad run over the past 10 years or so. That's one that we are taking a very close look at, and we definitely invested in it towards the end of last year within a lot of our model portfolios. If you think of energy stocks as well, they've done remarkably well, and I do think that that can continue. Again, as demand picks up, clearly all of us are driving more. You're going to see more traveling taking place. So that demand should drive that higher. And I think financials as well, when you think about moves in interest rates, which are very closely tied to the growth expectations. From a market cap perspective, we think small caps, since they're much more domestically oriented as well. So there are a lot of different areas that can do well. And they're really the ones that haven't done as well, at least compared to large cap technology over the last decade or so.
There's been a lot of talk about interest rates going higher this year. Why have interest rates, particularly long-term rates, moved higher this year?
This really goes back to this idea of improved growth expectations. And the impact, I think the dual impact of an improved vaccine rollout in addition to the fiscal response to COVID really can't be understated. The importance can't be understated. And think about the vaccine. To get a vaccine so soon after the pandemic started was unexpected. But then to get three of them and then to have them all on pace to inoculate and give us herd immunity in the United States basically by the 4th of July is pretty crazy to consider. So that's recalibrated growth expectations and obviously had that impact on interest rates as well. And then the fiscal situation. This all really started following the Georgia Senate runoff in the first week of January when it became clear that the Democrats, who absolutely have been targeting higher fiscal stimulus, won the majority of the Senate in the closest of close votes with a 50-50 split. That really supercharged expectations as well. And that meant no watering down necessary from a fiscal stimulus bill. Money all the way to the max in the hands of the people who can move the spending needle the most. So I think those two drivers, successful rollout of the vaccine, in addition to the continued growth from a fiscal stimulus side, I think that's really what's recalibrating growth expectations and therefore driving interest rates higher.
Why has this had a negative impact on some stocks? Particularly, we've seen it in the start this year to technology and some growth-oriented stocks.
That's a really great question. And one of the things that you've been hearing about more and more over the past, call it 2 or 3 months, or at least the start of this year, is this concept of duration in equities. And I think it's an interesting concept that has a merit and intuition, but I think that there are a few different holes with the relationship. And equity duration, consider it, you know, the amount of time that you have until an investor receives the cash flows from the stock. So a company that pays a lot of dividends right away, that has a short duration. A company that reinvests all of its money into future growth has a much longer duration. And those are the ones that have the high valuations, the ones that have really done well over the past 3, 5, 10 years, call it. And the long duration products, as you have that drive higher in yields, you can see how these long duration stocks would do poorly intuitively. And that's absolutely what happened at the start of 2021 so far. So that makes sense. But I think that there is a little bit of a hole in thesis because, you know, if you consider some short duration stocks like utilities, like staples that do pay high current income, they got hit just as badly as technology did in the rising rate environment. So I think that the bigger story is this recalibrated growth expectations that drives a broadening out of market participation. When everyone's sitting at home on Amazon and on their computer, technology is going to do well. Amazon's going to do well. But when there's no growth, you have to pay up for the companies that are able to achieve growth regardless of the market environment. But as everyone's starting to open up their doors and go out outside and revisit the world and travel. These higher growth expectations are really going to broaden out to more sectors. And because these individual parts of the market that we've been talking about have lagged for so long, they have so much more room to catch up. So anecdotally, we're already seeing some of these technology names sharply jump higher over the past couple of weeks. Certainly, rates haven't moved up as high as they were or as quickly as they were in the first few months of the year. To me, the sell-off in tech, it's more of a correlation than a causation as it pertains to interest rates. I think it's, again, getting back to this idea of these companies that had been lagging for so long because growth expectations were so low are finally starting to catch a bit.
Another topic that's coming up quite a bit because it's topical for everybody here is the discussions of the infrastructure bill. How do you look at that from an investment standpoint? Are there still opportunities? Have the markets already built in expectations and bid up stocks that would be affected by the infrastructure? Or do you see further opportunities if some form of an infrastructure bill gets passed?
There are a few different things at play. One is the long-term nature of what we've seen from this infrastructure bill that's been floated so far. And again, we're still in the early stages. We only know so much. But the initial glance is $2.25 trillion over an 8-year time frame. So even though markets are always forward-looking mechanisms, we think that there's certainly mispricing or repricing that can take place certainly over the next several years as, you know, we learn a little bit more as to what is entailed within this overall infrastructure bill. But then on the flip side of that, it does seem like this is something that the current administration wants to pay for on the tax side. And that's going to have opposite ramifications, at least from a corporate tax standpoint, possibly from an individual tax standpoint as well. So there are so many variables that we don't quite know at this point in time. Obviously, you know, we've had a nice run in a lot of these cyclical names, the ones that are maybe more industrials and materials oriented. But it seems like this infrastructure bill is going to be much more broad than that. And I think that there could be areas for participation that haven't quite fully been explored just at this point in time. But we do have to be mindful of the fact that it's likely that this is going to be negatively impacted on the bottom line from a tax perspective. And again, a lot more to be seen from that standpoint.
We've seen significant changes to the way we live and work over the last year, and some of those changes may be permanent. So after the 2021 so-called bounce back year, what economic growth rates do you see?
2021 should be just about a gangbusters year for growth. But I do think that there's a growing recognition, both from the monetary and the fiscal side, that there's so much more work to be done. And I think you're seeing it from the Fed, and you're seeing that from the current Biden administration. So currently, you've got unemployment at 6%, which compared to history is actually really strong. There was, you know, the idea that 5% unemployment is full unemployment not that long ago. But I think we've only recovered a little bit more than half of jobs lost during COVID. And I think that is something that is currently known from the policymaker perspective. Look no further than what you saw from the Fed in March. And they put out their statement of economic projections, and you saw their dot plots, and they were expecting low unemployment several years down the road, expecting rising inflation several years down the road, but also no rate hikes several years down the road. When you consider that fact on top of the, again, multi-year rollout from this potential infrastructure bill, we haven't had that in quite a long time. I think there's a recognition that even though things look like they're trending in the right direction, there's still so much more work to be done. Given that fact and the fact that the Biden administration, they saw what happened with the previous Democratic administration and that not enough was done in the aftermath of the financial crisis, that austerity kicked in too soon, and that ultimately, cynically, the midterms were terrible for the Democratic Party. So I think the current administration is considering a lot of these things here and saying, okay, we're going to keep the pedal to the metal. And the Fed is on board with that too. So I do think that for the next several years, we should continue to see really strong economic growth.
We're starting to see with this strong and revised economic forecast going much higher, that there's now talk where if you look at the, you know, the futures markets, they're building in that the Fed could start increasing interest rates next year. Whereas the Fed is saying a different story, where they're talking about it's on to 2023 before they'll really consider taking away some of the stimulus. Where do you think this lies?
One of my favorite charts, and it's run by or put together by a number of different firms. I want to say Credit Suisse or Goldman had the last one, but it's basically an overlay of the Fed funds rate and what the futures predicted that would be several years in the future. And without fail, every single rate hike cycle and rate cut cycle, the market expects the Fed to move quicker than they do. I think that we're really in that type of environment, and we need to take a step back and realize the Fed has been very transparent about what they want to accomplish here. Even if they achieve lower unemployment, higher inflation, they're telling us we're not going anywhere. And the market, I think, is getting ahead of itself once again, as it has done historically. So I think that we're in another one of these environments that the market is trying to jump the gun, is maybe potentially trying to force the Fed's hand, but they don't have to go anywhere. They don't have to do anything. Do we make it all the way to the end of 2023 without a rate hike? Remains to be said. I think there's a very small chance that they move really either this year or next year. So, you know, 2023, maybe the end of that is when we start to see liftoff a little bit. But I do think that once again, as usual, the market's expecting far more hawkishness out of the Fed than ultimately what we're going to get.
Final thoughts, you know, based on the outlook that you've discussed and based on the current environment, when you're building portfolios or when we're building portfolios, what are some of the sectors that we should be watching and paying attention to here and think about as we look to add to our portfolios?
The biggest thing that this whole backdrop and environment and outlook really tells us is that you need to own more than just what has done well. And you need to own more than just your home country bias would tell you. And you need to own more than just the large U.S. technology names that have really driven the market higher over the last couple of years. Positioning has been remarkably strong and really one way and one-sided within these types of companies. And admittedly, rightfully so. People who really just solely put their eggs in that basket are going to miss out on some of the best gains of this next rotation, of this next cycle that we're seeing. So from an individual factor standpoint, value and size have really lagged the market for really an extended period of time, because these types of factors need an acceleration or, you know, continuation of much higher growth to do well. And if you think of, you know, mid caps and small caps, and from a sector standpoint, financials and energy, materials, industrials. So those are the areas that we're looking at in the U.S. And broadly speaking, we think risk appetite will follow this higher. So when investors start to get a little bit more positive on risk and sentiment gets more aggressive, typically that leads to emerging markets. So we like to have, you know, strategic overweight positions in emerging markets. And I think that that's one that not enough investors are positioned in currently. So the main point, I think, is just being diversified outside of what has done well, because the futures winners are not likely not going to be the same as yesterday's. And you want to make sure that you continue to build well-diversified portfolios.
Thanks, Joe. This has been very helpful. I mean, with the economy at an inflection point, it's important to understand the issues that are driving the performance of the financial markets. And thank you all for listening to this episode of SK Wealth Management Solutions and Knowledge Podcast. You can subscribe and listen to all our podcasts on the various podcast sites and our website, skwealth.com.